Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everyone. Very, very happy Tech Tuesdays. If you've been following our show, every day is a different theme, and today is Tech Tuesday here on Doctor's Orders. I am your host, Dr. Baker. I am the owner of the Business Hospital, which is the only one of its kind in the world. I service 14 countries with my business treatments. And so my job, my goal, the only reason that I wake up to do work every day is to make sure that businesses are healthy. And so I do that in a host of ways. Number one, by providing treatment. But number two is by working with other individuals that have the expertise to help businesses or companies that are constituted to help companies. And so through our radio show here, that's what we do every day, is that our goal and function is to help your company in a variety of ways. One is to look at the world differently, or number two, use resources that maybe you didn't have access to beforehand. So we hope that you're able to bring something away from today's show no differently than any other show. In the event that you want to join our conversation, you can do so by calling us at 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. You also can send me a direct message at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that is info@drbaker.us. And so as we navigate through our different topics and our different segments each day, today we're going to bring in a guest later, Carl Meyer, who has a technology that is just helping businesses all over the nation in a very profound way. And when I say profound, you'll know why I say that a little bit later. But let's think about technology and the uses of technology. We've had on previous shows where we've had tech founders, we've had concepts regarding IT and managed IT, but we've also talked about just embracing technology and having a very good relationship with technology. Oftentimes, I will conduct an assessment on a business, and one of my assessment categories that we provide a metric to is your usage of technology and how technology works. And so in that instance, I would like to know if you're using technology at its highest level, if you're using it to make your work more efficient. Are you afraid of technology? Has it hampered your operation? Or do you have so much technology that it's eaten away at your profits, or it's actually made you slower because of your ineffective methods of using it or your inefficiencies of how you're integrating it? All of those things are very important. As a business owner, you need to understand how your relationship with technology is used to bolster your company and to increase your overall profits. Without further ado, I want to bring in today's guest, Carl Meyer of Abundant. Carl, how are you doing today, sir?
Very good. Very good. Thanks, Dr. Baker.
Absolutely. Glad to have you here. Really excited for you to share Abundant with the rest of our listeners. And while we're at it, why don't you set the baseline for them and tell them a little bit about Abundant, a little bit about you and your role with Abundant, and then how Abundant came to be.
Right. Well, Abundant uses software to help companies build a business operating system, which is a way to stay organized and help you as you grow your business to the next level. And this is based on my background helping companies grow over the past 30 or so years. I've helped a number of companies that have gotten stuck and helped them organize and be able to handle the growth of their business. It's not, sales is really important, but we also help with, we really focus on some other parts of the business so that you can handle that sales growth. So that's a quick overview for you.
Well, I said profound earlier, and I meant profound because the one area that is always lacking in a business that I see from an assessment standpoint, and I'm using this experience globally, is the need for sales and the understanding of sales. Is that number one, you know, what is sales? And we generically know it, but when it comes down to really crafting out what is sales, how to wrap your arms around it, sales processes, and then doing it in a way where it's deliberate and not accidental, many companies struggle with that. If you don't mind, just give our listeners a sense of why that became important to you and why is it such a reality that you decided to create a technology to assist with it.
Well, sales is really important. Nothing happens until you sell something, as one entrepreneur I met a long time ago told me, and it's as true today as the day I first heard it. You know, and you do need a process, a system to organize that. It doesn't happen by itself. It's not accidental. And, you know, and that's true for all parts of the business, that, you know, how you hire is really affected by if you do it purposefully, if it's not just by whoever happens to be standing, you know, nearby when you need another body, you know, as well as the, you know, operations, all the different parts of your business are like that. So, you know, making a plan, a process, so that your business, you know, operates, you know, like your computer, if it's got to have a plan, it's got to have a program to make it work consistently, repeatably, and be able to grow.
Well, you talk about having a formalized process and sales being the primary block of business. Considering that it's a staple of the existence of business, you know, do you have any thoughts surrounding why it's not understood holistically by companies and business owners, and how that component still continues to get missed, even though it should be the first level of our operation?
Right. Well, it's something that we all kind of feel like we can do is the first thing that comes to mind, that, you know, I know my product and I just really need to go out there and tell people about my product, my service, and how good it is, and they'll want to buy it. And, you know, that's very understandable. I can personally relate to that. But the reality is that's not how people make buying decisions. It's not just, oh, I heard about your product, it sounded great. You know, there's a lot more to it in terms of, you know, thinking about that. You know, you really need to interrupt people. I mean, people are so busy. How are you going to get their attention? You've got to think about that. You know, they may not be thinking that they need to hear about whatever your product or service is. And then from there, you have to engage them emotionally, because, you know, again, if you don't get the emotion, if people don't care and know you care, they're not even going to listen to what you've got to say. You know, and then once you do those steps, now you've got a chance to tell them about what a cool product or service you've got, and how it's going to help them, and then they can rationalize what their emotion is already telling them, that, oh yeah, maybe I need this. Then you can make the offer and close the sale. And I think that, you know, breaking it down like that is just not, you know, not, it's just not something we're born knowing. So that's something I've seen many, many times. Is that in line with your experience?
Absolutely it is, and therefore we're talking about the human element and understanding the different processes that inherently exist within the human element. And when I say the processes are inherent, number one is the relationship building and the cultivation in the cycle, making sure that your consumer or target audience really can identify with you and know you, and that you know them. Now that's the human element of it, but then there's the system side of things, in which, in this instance, especially for the part that I think confuses people, is the technology. And so talk to us a little bit about the system. You could have created anything in the world in order to operate as a business. Why did you select an operating system or a technology to assist? And then how have you seen that make the difference with companies?
Right. Well, the you know, for us, the business operating system, you know, extends beyond just sales. It's about managing the whole business. You know, just because you sell something doesn't mean you're, you know, able to deliver it. You still need to collect the money. Those are not, you know, trivial things. And, you know, when you're starting and you know, it's just you and a couple people, you know, it's simpler to handle that. But once you get, you know, hey, we're having success, we're adding more people, now all of a sudden we got 10 or 20 or 30 people. Wow, it's a bit more complicated to keep track of all that. And that's where I've seen time and time again these companies stall, you know, their growth. You know, people come to me and say, you know, my sales have been at the same level for, you know, 2-3 years in a row, and I'm working really hard, and what used to, you know, be working to help me grow isn't working, you know, can you help? And that's where, you know, the experiences that I've had really have come into play. And what I found is time and time again, I was bringing in the same set of tools. And so it seemed to make sense to put them into software so they could be more accessible at a lower price point for more companies. And so that's what we've done. And it's really as much about managing people and as well as processes that we're really trying to help with.
Well, I think in the instance, one thing that you speak about that's really important is understanding that the technology that you created wasn't so much to reinvent the wheel of operation, but really to work as a supplement, primarily, when I say supplement, meaning that the human capital is still the driving force, but how do we assist that human capital in a function that's necessary and key, not just for, you know, growing the business, but for sheer survival in many other cases, but how do you do it in a way that's effective, a way that's efficient, a way that is consistent with how you run your business? The technology can exponentially grow that reality. Are we understanding that correctly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the fundamental, you know, aspect of, you know, almost all businesses that I see, operating businesses, is that things get done by people. And we have to keep those people, we have to communicate them, organize them, motivate them, and keep them trained up so that everything happens in a way that's, you know, effective, serves our customers, and, you know, keeps everybody, like you say, the company survives and thrives. So
absolutely. And so what have you seen from an integration standpoint when a company says, you know what, we want to bring in your tool, or maybe they already have a tool? What are some of the, and this is a two-part question, but some of the integration problems that you typically see and some of the successes that you see almost immediately?
Well, you know, people are very used to, it's very common to say, okay, hey, I'm running my company. Listen, I've got some way to keep track of my customers. You know, maybe that's a CRM. I've got some way to keep track of operations. Maybe that's a project management system. I've got some way to keep track of the books. So I've got my accounting system. But very, very few of the companies that we see have something to, from a technology point of view, help them with the management of people. You know, it's not an, you know, it may be you've got a payroll system that, you know, we know, you know, where they live and how much we pay them, but how do we make sure we're, you know, they know where we're going, they know where they fit into the organization, we have process to make this, identify opportunities and make decisions on a consistent basis, you know, track our procedures, all these different things that are part of managing a business at a certain scale, that, you know, that's what the tool is, you know, the tools that we focus on are doing. So one of, you know, you talk about integration, so I think that's the other half of the question. As a, you know, founder, CEO of a company, when you start it, it's very appropriate. You're rolling up your sleeves, so to speak, and you're getting in there and you're doing work and you're working with everybody. And you know, you can talk to everybody every day because you've just got a handful of people. That works fantastic. That's a great way to run a business at that size. But all of a sudden, you realize you've got 15 or 30 people because you've been growing. And now, when you try and just roll up your sleeves and do it the same way, it's overwhelming. There's too many people. There's too many questions. There's too many decisions to be made. You know, how do I delegate? And delegation, you know, on the surface can sound pretty straightforward. But if you haven't built up the infrastructure so that the people you're delegating to know where you're going, know how you're making decisions, know how they fit in, all these different pieces, then that's where we see it fall apart.
All right. So in this case, and you talk about managing all of those realities, oftentimes, especially as businesses go to grow and they go to scale, they go through the iteration of sometimes just being a solopreneur, and then, or maybe they're a mom and pop shop and have a few people. But oftentimes that might include 1099s or strategic partners. Does the software assist with those types of companies through their growth stages?
Right. You know, from a, you know, legal or accounting or tax point of view, the distinction between 1099 and employee and strategic partner might be very important, but from a human point of view, it really doesn't matter. You still, they're part of your team. You need to motivate them. You have to have good communication. They need to know where they fit in and what decisions they can make. So that's what the tools that we're focused on do. And so we're not worried about the legal and the accounting point. We're focused on managing the team to bring the team together so they work effectively. We help customers and we make money.
Makes sense. And I think in this case, when we're talking about what is sense making, what is reasonable, where should your mind be? We know that the top rationale for business success has everything to do with the humans inside of that business. There are a lot of concepts, there are a lot of companies that have a place among the target audience, but without the right people doing the execution, then that business can't quite flourish the way in which it should. What gets even worse is when you start bringing in more people, and now all of a sudden, what is everyone doing? Why are they doing it? One thing that we do inside of the business hospital during treatment is that we might look up task analysis, and task analysis is our way of looking at who's doing what at any given time. What does execution look like? What are roles and responsibilities? And inside of that, that can get very murky or muddy, if you will. So now you've got three people doing the same workflow that now that makes the company unproductive, or something gets neglected because too many people are doing the same thing or not enough people are doing other things, and however that's supposed to be dispersed. What are some of the drawbacks in some of your clients' minds, or some that were potential clients? I know for me, a lot of times people are trying to determine, how do I quantify my business health? And let me qualify even my statement. But let's say I go into a business and I say this business is unhealthy, and you're unhealthy from a legal standpoint. Well, when we highlight the legal woes of theirs, they're making declarations on, do I need that help now or do I need that help later? And it's my job to say, look, you can take it whenever you want, but the risk associated are X, Y, and Z. And at any moment, any one of these risks show up, you now have to carry the burden of that. What does that look like on your side when you tell them that, look, there's a great technology that we've created that's going to help you in these ways? What are some of the issues that go on with, you know, when you tell them about the technology and their realization of its importance?
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the symptoms, if you will, that, you know, we regularly see is the business owners just overwhelmed. They have so many things on their to-do list. They feel like they can never catch up. They, you know, feel like they can't take a vacation for fear that, you know, everything's going to fall apart and they're going to, you know, disappoint customers, lose customers. So, you know, that is absolutely a, you know, a situation that we see on a very regular basis. And so, you know, that's, like you say, that's a risk. Hey, you don't have to deal with it now, but if you don't, you know, how's this going to affect your, you know, your health and your personal life as well as your business? So that's a decision people need to make.
Absolutely. And I think in that instance is looking at it with the appropriate lens and saying that, okay, if I'm overwhelmed here, does this technology increase my lifestyle to where maybe I'm not as overwhelmed and I can focus attention elsewhere? But even with that, does it ever come to a point where the criticism or the fear once again comes in as, well, now I have to spend time learning the system. I might as well continue doing the thing that I'm doing. Right. How frequently do you see that?
Oh, I had that conversation this morning, as a matter of fact. yes, you've been sitting in on our sales calls.
Huh? Yeah, I've seen a sales call or two, right?
Yes, sir. Oh, but, yeah, so, and, you know, that's a great question because, you know, you've got to make a decision. Do I make an investment? And usually what we're talking about is 1 to 2 hours a week that you would invest so that you can build the structure and the company so that hopefully, you know, 6 months down the line, you can have two or three managers under you. And so effectively, you know, if you've got three managers under you, now you've got yourself and three managers all managing this situation, your company. So that's four people. So you've got four times the horsepower, the hours effectively to manage the company that you do right now when it's just yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, is it worth investing an hour or two a week for, let's just say, 6 months in order to get a result like that and effectively buy yourself a whole bunch of hours? That's a decision you got to make.
Well, one analogy that I give to business owners is that sometimes you have to take a step or two back in order to catapult forward. And I always provide the analogy of a long or high jumper. You know, they jump really high or they jump really far, but they don't just stand there and do it. They actually have to walk backwards first. You know, if you ever notice a kicker in football, the kicker has to take a few steps backwards, but he gets enough momentum. Now the ball can go further. And a lot of times in business, that's what happens, is that something that seemingly is going to slow you down, if it's executed appropriately, you go into it with the right value, you understand what the resource is, it can catapult your company and provide the type of momentum that minimizes or in some cases can eradicate some of your inefficiencies that is affecting directly to your bottom line. And explaining that can be difficult at times, especially when you're talking technology. And I would add to that, especially when a person has had poor technology before, now they have technology trauma. Have you ever gone behind someone that has tried a product, they spent 10,000, 20 grand, 40 grand on a solution, the solution didn't work well either because it was a poor solution or it was poor execution of a really good solution? How many times have you had to run up behind that and then have to say, but look what we have? What does that look like in your world?
Yes, we definitely do see that. People, you know, invest money in you know, other solutions. And a lot of times, you know, the concept has been good, but, you know, maybe it was designed for companies that were just, you know, significantly larger, or, you know, they had expectations that, you know, the company was going to be able to do more of the work themselves, you know, and didn't need as much handholding as they really needed. You know, what we see is, you know, our experience is we see companies that are at a stage when they do need weekly handholding, you know, if you will, you know, to help guide them through the process. It's not that it's a super complicated set of tools. It's simply that, you know, business owners tend to be very distracted with many other priorities, and having it's just like a personal trainer for your, you know, exercise. Having a commitment that you're going to meet with somebody at a certain hour each week increases your odds of doing your exercise. So that's what we see.
Absolutely. I think in this case is that when companies are making these declarations, you know, they're making declarations in many cases, you know, out of desperation, panic, or out of I need a solution quickly. I know in my line of work, I almost never work with a company that's doing preventative care on themselves. It's always stage four cancer or my hair is on fire. And I've got to come up with the miracle. And if I don't, then I'm not really that good of a business doctor. And you're like, well, I mean, this ditch is so much larger than the shovels that have ever been created. But yet still, we have to figure out how to cover it up is essentially what I see a lot of times. What does that look like for you in your space when you show up to present, you know, your technology? Is it a lot of companies that are doing pretty well and you can enhance them? Or do you need to resurrect some of these companies and really, you know, remove the damage that's being caused by ineffective, you know, behaviors and techniques?
Right. Great question. Yes, we do love to work with companies. We'll see some companies that have big ambitions of, you know, growing bigger, and they're, you know, they're starting fairly small and like, hey, we want to get the right infrastructure in place early. And, you know, we see what you're doing. Sounds like a cost-effective way for us to do that. So we love to work with those companies. But by and large, we find that's the exception as opposed to the rule. You know, the rule is, you know, very much like you said, you know, we've got a big problem. You know, we're stage four. We need to, you know, figure out a way to get past that. I don't really have time to do this, but I still need to do it. How can we make this work? And even further, sometimes, you know, I'm not sure I've got the cash flow to be able to handle that. You know, and sometimes are helping them see where, you know, where there's some opportunities to get some quick wins so that they can, you know, have the cash flow to make it all work. And then, you know, then hopefully we can shovel enough dirt to put out the fire. And
what works from there if it all can go. But recognizing if you have the cash flow in many cases, and this is one reason why my work is beneficial, or at least in my opinion anyways, is that there's a lot of companies that say, well, we don't have the means or we don't have the cash flow. But they probably, well, not probably, I don't want to make that assumption. In my experiences, an appropriate pro forma or financial strategy has not been done on the company. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they are accurate by saying it's not there. And we can tell it is not there. But that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be there. And with a quick change here or a quick change there, the money could be there because they have more than enough coming in. But how they have it allocated, how they're spending, the time frames of their spend, all of their budgetary needs have a lot to do with that. Do you find yourself ever at any case assisting companies with understanding their budgets and understanding their plans to where they, you could say, this is how this technology fits because you stand to gain X, Y, and Z from the implementation, but we got to fix your A, B, and C first. Does that happen to you much at all?
It does. It does. We see situations where, you know, I love what you're telling me. You know, it sounds like a good solution. I, you know, I understand why this is, you know, these are good practices and that I should implement. But, you know, I'm you know, barely keeping my nose above water, and I'm afraid to open my mouth for I'll get the mouthful of water. So you got to find a way to help me get, you know, there. And, you know, and it sounds like your background and experience is, you know, helping them do that a lot. So, I think, you know, that's a natural, you know, teamwork, you know, to work together on that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Now, you told on yourself, or at least the audience anyway, that you were super old like I am since you've been around here, you know, 30 years. And so in this instance, that means you and I can share dialogue and how things used to be in comparison to how they are now. And are you finding with your experiences that business owners are willing to embrace the change of technology? Are they resistant to it? Are they seeking it out? They just don't know how to make the decision or how to separate the differences. What is the overall attitude toward just technology or the integration of technology into these businesses and how readily I would say embrace they are in order to use them?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting point. What we find is, you know, it's really not the technology that's the problem. You know, our tools are specifically designed to be, you know, very, you know, straightforward to use. But what we find is that it's simply the resistance to change in general that is really the bigger factor. So if, you know, if you're of the mindset that, you know, I've got a problem that's big enough that I'm willing to make some changes to fix it, then there's a very high likelihood that, you know, we're going to be a good fit and be able to help you. But if you're very hesitant to, you know, I just want different results, but I'm not ready to make, you know, changes in my behavior, that's probably not going to end up where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. And we see that happen all the time. It's one of the reasons why it's hard for companies to continue to grow and scale, because as things change, it's not about changing your actual business model. It's making sure that your model is harnessing any adaptation that it needs to in order to thrive in the current condition or space. So, you know, we could look at that from an industry standpoint, and it always would behoove me. I would talk to my father, who retired from the main post office in Detroit, Michigan, a couple of years back. But I said, man, Dad, how come the Postal Service didn't own email? What was it about your operation that no one there looked to the future and said, well, there's, you know, this thing called the web coming, and they'll probably send things forward, and that probably should come from us. And they never did. And it's the same reality that you have with a Kmart going out of business. Well, you know, while Walmart is as large as ever, you know, or, you know, Hollywood Video or Blockbuster, not understanding that a streaming service would come. And why don't they own that? Right. So you've got all of these realities of there are things that are inherent to your operation. They're not changing who you are, but it's allowing you to adapt. Do people see your technologies as a way to continue to allow them to adapt, or do they see you as a replacement of how they typically operate? So if this is my sales function, this is my operational style, this new technology is going to change that, or do they see it as an accent or a necessary need for their adaptation?
You know, we see our clients tend to appreciate what we're doing because of the flexibility. You know, the structure we're putting in place is not designed to define who you are. It's simply to enhance who you already are. You need to keep your style. You need to keep what makes you different. You just need a little bit more organization to help you grow to the next level. It's, you know, we've seen some of our competitors, you know, are a lot more strict about this is the way you do it. There's no, you know, flexibility. It's my way, the highway. And, you know, I've worked with so many small businesses over the years that I don't know. I just can't wrap my head around that approach. I feel like the strength, the benefit of being a small company is the ability to adapt and differentiate. You know, the strength of the big company is we can produce a billion widgets every day and, you know, overwhelm you, but, you know, that doesn't fit for everybody. So we want to be the structure that keeps you adapting, keeps you flexible, you know, plays to your strength as a small company and to your differences. So that's the way we see it.
Makes sense. We need to pause here for a moment for a station identification. We got a quick break here with today's segment of Tech Tuesdays is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. Pro Elite Training is the revolutionary app that allows you to train and increase your muscle memory through the metronome of music to increase rhythm, tempo, and pace. Train with professional athletes such as Trey Burke from Houston Rockets or Jordan Seibert of the Orlando Magic, along with Tony Johnson Jr., bare knuckle fighting champion of the world. Is these are athletes that are in the platform that will help you with your muscle memory. So whether you are a serious athlete or you're a person looking for a really good workout, or you just want to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace, you do that with Pro Elite Training, which is Pro Elite, all one word. You can find it on the web at getproelite.com or in the Apple and Play Store at Pro Elite Training. Once again, that's getproelite.com or Pro Elite Training in your app stores. So I want to turn my attention, everybody. We have Carl Meyer here from Abundant, CEO of Abundant, and we're talking here on Tech Tuesdays about sales technologies that Abundant carries. If you want to join the conversation, you can at 859-291-2255. That's 859-291-2255, or write us directly at info@drbaker.us. So I want to turn my attention here, Carl, if you don't mind, is to the fact that at one time you were a tech founder. You have a technology company with a software system that you are the CEO of, and that you guys offer that, you know, to a target audience or a consumer base. Want to be able to talk to our listeners a little bit about that process, you know, because I imagine that you were in corporate and you decided to leave corporate and then create this company. Walk us through your story a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, this is actually the third software company that I've founded or co-founded. And so the first one was during the dot-com. I was working for a bank, public company, and saw an opportunity to use some of my experience and put together a business-to-business marketplace during the dot-com era, and got a little traction and had a second round of funding scheduled to close right about the time that the dot-com crashed. And so that, long story short, ended that company. And then had another experience with a partner. He was a consultant in the healthcare space, and we were able to put together a product that helped him enhance his consulting and provide a service that helped the major hospitals that he worked with. And so we did that, and we were able to get into hospitals, major hospitals, I believe in 14 states, and had some success with that. But the technology over time moved ahead, and we were outcompeted by some of the big tech companies, and so that one eventually wrapped up. And then at this stage, I guess Abundant's been in business 4.5 years, and took us a while to get our software in shape for the end user. But we've been out there working with companies for a couple of years and helping them to move forward. We tried to go through the process of understanding what the customer wanted and build the software that fit what they were solving their problem.
In that in your statement, you mentioned a lot of very important and key factors in the journey. And part of what I do here on Doctor's Orders is that I want business owners to see themselves in different processes from different business owners and experts, and how there are some very consistent reoccurring themes. And one of those themes you mentioned is that you went through a fundraise. Mm-hmm. And so there was a need there for capital. And when we talk about having a need for capital, in many instances, people like to believe from a general standpoint that you've run out of money or you don't have money. In other instances, which that could be true, but in other instances, it's really to bolster and capitalize and grow the company exponentially. So therefore, your investment or your borrowing is strategic because your business model may be very sound based on key factors that you've already proven. So as you're going through these processes of building these companies out, you've had very different experiences from being the founder yourself to having a partner to putting in other investors. Talk to me or talk to the listeners a little bit about your first two companies and then what experiences were you able to draw from and pull that made you significantly better in this particular round?
Mm-hmm. Right. During the first one, my understanding of, how to raise funds, what investors were looking for was very limited. I've got a decent financial background, but the specifics of raising investment in the venture capital world, even if it's angel investors or other investors, it's a very specific thing. And so that was very educational to me, that the way that they were calculating the returns was, a little bit outside of, the concept of, if I'm going to put in some money, I'm going to start a business and it's going to start cash flowing, in a few months. That's kind of, if I'm going to be a locksmith, I'm going to buy my van and my equipment and hang out my shingle, and hopefully in a couple months I'll be generating cash and, able to pay my bills. But with a software company, it's a very different thing, and especially for a venture investor, they're assuming that something like 1 out of 10, maybe 2 out of 10 companies is going to provide the majority of the returns on their capital. That they're assuming that some of the companies, 3 or 4 of the companies, will just not even make it. They'll never get anything back from them. Another three or four companies are probably just, you know, maybe giving them their money back or a little bit more. So that was a real concept for me to learn.
Well, I think what you highlight there is how you have to be versed about your business. And when I say versed, understanding, you know, what is exactly your target audience? You know, if you're creating a tech company, and I'm going to qualify this with a company that we've all heard of, even though they've had major success, they've also ran into obstacles and barriers just over something as simple as target audience, and that company is Peloton. So mm-hmm. Peloton jumped out the gate. Everybody thought it was great. It had hyper growth. It was very explosive, and they went to go public, and there was a problem, which was, what kind of company are you? Are you health and wellness? You know, are you a tech company? What type of company do you present yourself as? Well, when you just mentioned, Carl, that, you know, the investment world is very specific. Well, how you calculate your returns on a tech company is different than how you calculate returns on a health and wellness company, and who your target audience is for one is different than the other. But understanding that as a startup founder or a young business owner is very key. But even though it's key, you might still be novice at it, and that can lead to frustration or confusion. Did you feel those emotions when you first were starting out, and how did they subside over time?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would talk to investors and say, hey, I got this great idea. And they, you know, some of them would say, you know, hey, this one's just not for me. And I really, you know, had trouble, you know, getting out of them, you know, why they didn't feel like it was a good fit. And, you know, over time, you know, I've picked up a fair bit of information about how that process works, and you know that these angel investors might look at 1 to 200 companies for every one they invest in, and that they're looking at, you know, not just is it a good idea, but you know, how far is it, you know, along on a technology scale, how long far along is it in terms of proving that the customers will buy what you got. You know, what does your team look like? All these other things that they're looking at that they may not, you know, spell out to you during the conversation about why they're not going to invest. If there is such a conversation at all, they may not, just may not call you back. So, you know, that was something that over time, as I learned about, you know, made it a lot easier to understand what was going on. And then, you know, for the second business, you know, using some of those lessons learned to, you know, find the, you know, better suited investors, better explain where we are on those various journeys with the technology, with the market acceptance, you know, with our management team, all these different things that we, you know, learned, you know, we were able to better position our pitch and explanation to the investors.
And so all of that is vital, and it leads me to something that I think is important to understand, and that's your rationale for the company that you create, especially in the tech sector, because you had a background in finances at a level, and you also had a background in sales. But did you create, and I want to speak specifically about Abundant as opposed to the other two opportunities, but did you create Abundant based on your skill set, the opportunity that you thought existed, your passion? What was the single thing, or what was the recipe or the combination for?
Right. I think it was really a combination of the things that, you know, had definitely, you know, identified tools that had been successful that, you know, we're already using to help companies in the advisory work I'd been doing. So that was very important. It was something that I cared about. I really enjoy seeing companies, you know, to succeed. I've, you know, had personal relationships either with family, friends, people I've developed relationships through business that have been at this stage where they're, you know, they're trying to move beyond, like you say, the mom and pop with a handful of people to the, you know, whatever it might be, 30 or 50 or 100 or more people. and helping them to get there. So that was a certain amount of passion. And so it fit with my skill set, fit with the market need that I perceived. And then it's also something I cared about. So, you know, I think the balanced approach is something that is in my mind. If you've got, great to have passion, but if all you've got is passion, you know, that seems to be a concern for me. You know, if you've got knowledge, that's great, but if you don't have a certain amount of passion, I worry that, you know, your desire is going to run out at some point. So I like to see a little bit of each.
Makes really good sense, and it's really good advice amongst our business owners. I know one aspect of my business treatments, especially in my business exams, I go into, you know, rationales. I go into personal connectivities to the business, which are a part of my metrics to determine if there's a good fit, even philosophically, for the work that someone is doing. And there's many times that I've seen startup founders create something because they individually had a problem, and maybe they weren't proficient at doing it. Maybe they don't even have a passion, but they thought to themselves, well, heck, I know that I need it, and maybe I'll create a company around it because I know others will need it. But I find that they struggle because they're not intuitively and effectively created, connected to their company. But on the flip side of that is there's people that live, sleep, eat, drink, die their concept, product, service, or company, but they don't have all the other components. And so that pushes them a little bit further than others, mainly because the passion won't let it die, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it makes them better or that they scale better. What are some of the pitfalls, or I would say any of the barriers or obstacles that you either ran into or that you've seen that you could offer as a warning to other business owners that may be listening?
Well, there's certainly quite a list of pitfalls that are out there, but I think for me, one of the things that I really find is that the ability to delegate has been consistently shown to be the difference between success at the mom and pop level and the success at the next level. If you're, and I know some people that are just, their personality, their mentality, their experience has led them to, you know, I need to be hands-on, I need to touch it, this is what works for me. That's great. But for them, I think they have to recognize that that limitation is going to keep them at the mom-and-pop level. And that, hey, that can work great, not trying to knock that. But if you say, hey, I have goals, I have aspirations of reaching the next level, I don't want to have 50 or 100 or more people, you know, I need to figure out how I'm going to delegate, how I'm going to grow the people in this organization, how I'm going to have a system, a team. Then, you know, so that to me is a big pitfall. Understanding where you want to go and matching, you know, with your skills and abilities, as well as then what do I need, what resources do I need to be able to execute at that level?
So I want to talk about that. I think that's a really good point as it relates to the size of your company, in which when you went to create Abundant, I'm certain that there was a size that you thought, this is where I want to take my company to, and I want to get it there within this amount of time frame. I think for others is that they're always uncertain about what should they be or shouldn't be. So even if you have ideas of having a large company, but you might operate much better a smaller company based on your behaviors, your characteristics, your resources, and in many cases, the product or service that you offer. In other instances, you know, companies or business owners could be much larger than where they currently exist, but because they either don't know what they should or shouldn't do or how to navigate, then that becomes a problem as well. I want to go back to the mom and pop example. Is that there are a lot of micro boutique and really small mom and pop shops that are done very well, even if they're small. And I'm talking one person company, three person company, does not need to be much bigger than that, but they can provide a fantastic living for themselves for decades and even pass that company off in the event that they do it well. Whereas in other cases, it's very difficult for a company to exist for a very long time when they're small because the market ends up collapsing on them. Other competitors end up removing them, or maybe they have a loyal-based company and they literally start having patients, or not patients, but customers die off where, you know, they just, you know, we've had, you know, this one company service us for 25 years and now they let the business go. Well, how big was that account for you? If that account was 30%, you just lost 30% of your business now and you had nothing to replace it. Now, if you've done that three times, then in a sense your business could be gone. When you look at the sales side of it, and I'm pushing you back to the technology itself, you know, you hold different opportunities to engage with people in the realm of sales. What is it about sales that people just don't get, that they miss? And when I say that, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that say, I'm not a salesperson, and they want some other entity to do it. Are people just simply afraid of it because of how they've been sold to, or is there something else going on that people see that keeps them from engaging in sales in ways that is a benefit to them?
Right. I think you point out that there are several different reasons. I think a lot of people just feel like, you know, sales is, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, evil, they're manipulative. And, you know, so I don't want to do that. I don't want to manipulate people. And so, you know, you do. So, you know, I see that from time to time. Other situations, you know, I see that, you know, yes, I want to sell my product. I'm happy to put in the work. And, but they're just not using good practices. They're saying, I'm just going to go talk to people and I'm going to count that as sales. It's sort of like an accountant walking in and saying, I'm going to write numbers down in the computer and that's accounting. It's like, well, maybe not. You know, if you've got to identify a situation where you see, you know, the people say, yes, I have a problem. They're not satisfied with the status quo, and you can start to work out with them, you know, here's the implication of that, and what would happen if we do solve that. So if but that's a change of behavior. That's a habit of, you know, especially if you've been running your company for a while and that's how you sell, is you just kind of go out and talk to people. Come in and say, okay, now we need to do it a different way. You're like, wait, I've been doing this for how many years? And now you want me to change? It's like, that's not easy. You know, mm-hmm. And that's just human. It's not, you know, criticism of the person. It's just that change isn't easy for any of us. And it takes time and practice. And you've got to know what it looks like. You know, what are you striving towards? So if you haven't identified, oh, I need to, you know, be asking questions to draw people out and find those problems and find those situations and then ask questions to, you know, kind of keep moving forward and show them that there's a return on using my service or product. That's a lot of change.
It is. And so not only are you changing an element, and change is difficult, but in many cases, you're changing an element that your muscle memory has perfected in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so now you have to undo or integrate a new behavior. And that not only can be scary, it can just be challenging just by itself. You know, if I were to take the sport analogy, if you've shot a free throw a certain way or you've thrown a ball a certain way, I mean, heck, I like to play cornhole. I'm an avid cornhole player, and I think I'm pretty good now, but I had to change my throwing style because every time the bag would hit the board, my style wouldn't have control. So it took me a very long time to change my throwing style. So I had to reproduce a new muscle memory. Well, in sales, it could be the same thing because you're used to doing the thing that's common to you. And so now you have to determine if this new thing is going to yield you a better dividend than the thing you've been doing. And I've been conducting a lot of assessments here recently for some organizations that essentially act as an umbrella to other companies. And inside of some of these assessments, I'm finding that, you know, there's a lot of companies that flat out attribute their success to luck. Never a sales process, never a skill set. They're just like, I'm lucky. And they've been in business for 15, 20 years. And you're like, that's 20 years of luck. Like, let's take all your luck and let's put that on the lotto, the Mega Million ones, and then let's go sit down after that. Right, because you're that lucky. But the reality is they're being formally assessed, and that is their answer. And when you talk about a sales process or a cycle, I find that even the person that doesn't have one can be a little bit more afraid to introduce one. And then you add technology on top of that. Now, both of them are creating a fear factor where they're like, I just don't want to participate. Do you see both of those elements adding to the fear factor when you come in and you speak to some of these business owners?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I guess I've been talking mostly about like the actual sales part of it. But yeah, you've got, you know, let's start measuring our lead generation activities. Now let's start marketing, monitoring and tracking our marketing activities as we move down through the funnel towards the sales process, and then measure the effectiveness of the sales process and track, you know, it's like, wow, all that, really? Do I need to do all that?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't take change in a bite-sized manageable approach, you know, it will overwhelm any organization. And so, you know, it's not just about what, okay, great, we know what this should look like, but we've got to do it in a way, you know, that prioritizes the big impacts. We've got to do it in a way that allows people to adapt. We can't forget that there are people involved, and we got to keep in mind that we're doing this on a budget, so we don't have unlimited funds to make all these changes either.
Absolutely, and knowing when to make the change versus when not to, when to make them today while holding the other ones off, but then putting that in the process to revisit it because it does have priority or it is important or it's bringing you a new set of values. What can the people do if they want to contact you to learn more about Abundin, to actually have the services and the technology? How do they reach you?
Well, they can certainly visit us at our website at abundin.com. They can look up Carl Meyer on LinkedIn and find us that way. And we're on most of the other social media as well.
Okay, fantastic. And let's remind the listeners again about Abundin, the services itself, and then how it makes them better.
So Abundin is a business operating system. We help you implement the business operating system and build the habits so that your business can scale up from the mom and pop level to the next step up and help you both personally and professionally have a better life. And we'd love to hear your thoughts and inputs. And I appreciate your time, Doc.
Absolutely. Glad you were able to come on the show today. As you know firsthand, you know, being a multiple-time business owner and a startup founder, that this journey is not an easy journey, but it's a worthwhile journey. Hence the reason why you continue to do so. Once again, everybody, this was Carl Meyer of Abundin. I'm Dr. J.C. Baker of the Business Hospital and Doctor's Orders. Our job and function is to make sure that your business is operating as healthy as it possibly can. We hope that you gained something from today's episode. And as a reminder, tomorrow's Worldwide Wednesday, and we'll look at a global perspective of business. And so we hope that you continue to stay in the course, fight the good fight, and I wish your business all the best health. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.